Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 425 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how are you doing this week, my friend?
I'm doing good, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. We're going to dive straight into the review part of the show. We're going to start here last Friday, December the 1st, at the Bolton Whites Hotel in Bolton, Lancashire. This one was live on Channel 5. I was at the Frank Warren card, so I didn't see any of this, but friend of the show, Isaac Lowe, with a good win. He's now 24-2 with three draws. A TKO for him in the first round against the Brazilian Jonatas de Oliveira, who was a late addition to the card, but you know, he was 5-5. He had 5 KO wins himself, but the 5 losses were all on points. It's the first time he's ever been knocked out. So yeah, good stuff there for Isaac Lowe. Also on the card, a really terrible performance from Nathan Gorman, who came in almost 300 pounds. He's now 19-3. He lost on points over 8 rounds to Bodan Myronets, who's now 8-1. Like I say, an absolute shocker. People really, really angry with Gorman. A lot of people had him in their bets and stuff like that. I was one of them people. Yeah, I don't know what Gorman's doing. I mean, you know, you look back now to some of those big opportunities he had with the likes of Daniel Dubois, with the likes of Fabio Wardley. Obviously, both guys beat him, but still, you know, he was fancied in both of those fights. And yeah, you know, just I just don't know what's going on with the guy. He's just putting on more and more weight. And honestly, I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, he needs to lose probably about 50 pounds for me to want to see him in the ring again. He did start picking it up a little bit towards the end of the fight, but I think it was just too late. And like I say, the referee, Darren Sargentson, scored it 77-76 to Myronets, who I'd never heard of at all. Huge shock there. Also on the card as well, special mention to Chloe Watson, now 7-0. She's now the new EBU European flyweight champion, a unanimous decision over 10 two-minute rounds against Justine Lallemand, who's now 9-3 with a draw. Chloe Watson still without any KOs just yet. Moving now to this card here. It was the card I was at. It was live on TNT Sport at the York Hall, Bethnal Green, London. Let's start with the undercard. The traffic was so bad getting over there. I actually missed this one live. But yeah, Aronzo Berardi, now 7-0. A TKO for him in just the first round against Israel Dufus, who's now 20-11. Quite a shock, actually, because like I say, Dufus can be quite tough sometimes. And again, I always revert back to that fight that he had with Chevron Clark. You know, he showed his toughness there, went 10 rounds with him. It was only 2 fights ago. And I didn't know much about this guy, Aronzo Berardi. I thought, you know, he's fighting down the card. He's 6-0, 5 KOs from Italy, living in Germany. Young cruiserweight. Hadn't heard of him at all. And I thought there could be an upset. I don't know much about Berardi, but to get Dufus down 3 times in the first and get the stoppage is quite impressive. Also on that card, getting to fights I was there for now, Royston Barney Smith moved to 8-0, a TKO for him in round 3 against Michael Velasco, now 10-14. Really, really good performance from Royston. I thought he looked, you know, almost punch perfect in the first round. Didn't waste a shot. You know, you could see him get the full kind of measure on his shots as well. You know, he come out and hit Velasco with some big shots in the first round. And yeah, like I say, was getting the measure right. And yeah, looked like he was there to not mess around. Looked like he was there to get a stoppage. And I was saying he got two back-to-back first round KOs. Then got two back-to-back six-round points decisions, and here he goes back to the stoppages. It was a good performance from him. He looked really good. I'm a fan of Royston's, to be honest. I want to see how he progresses, and like I say, I think he was really good the other night, man. Didn't waste a shot. Also on the card, Moses Itauma, now 7-0. I think I sat next to his dad, potentially. I don't know who the guy was. Who was sat next to me, but I think he was somewhat involved with Itauma. Itauma 7-0, a first round TKO against Michael Boloz, who's now 5-7 with two draws. Itauma come out like a rocket, tried to hurt him with the very first punch he threw, which I think he was successful. I think he did hurt Boloz. Then, you know, Boloz ends up down, ends up getting back up, ends up taking a few more, and the referee stopped it. And Boloz was complaining. I don't think he was too happy about being stopped like that, but I think he was definitely going to get stopped anyway in that round, and the referee probably has done him a favour, to be honest with you. Also on the card, Raven Chapman, now 8-0, a unanimous decision over 10 two-minute rounds against Lucy Sedlakova, who is now 15-2 with a draw. It was for the WBC International featherweight title. Good performance from Raven Chapman. I actually... it was good to kind of sit there and see her in the flesh. Good fighter, some good skills and the rest of it, but yeah, I kind of expected a little bit more. I have to say that, if I'm going to be completely honest, because she was fighting a girl who, you know, hadn't boxed in, I think it was like 17 months. And I just thought to myself, you know, she can be quite heavy-handed, Chapman, and we might see a stoppage here. But, I mean, Sedlakova was a tough girl. She you know, she was bloodied, and it was quite a brutal, not a brutal fight, but her face looked like a real mess. And, she was game, man. She was very, very game, very brave. I don't know what she got paid, but she certainly earned every penny of it. Good performance from Raven Chapman. I think she's already, if I'm not mistaken, started calling out Amanda Serrano. I don't want to put that out there 100% like that's gospel truth, but I'm sure I saw that headline. I think she should slow down with that one. Also on the card, we saw Brad Strand move to 11-0, a unanimous decision over 10 rounds against Joshua John, who's now 8-2. That one was for the vacant WBO European Super Bantamweight title. Quite frustrating to watch Joshua John. You know, I was sat there, and, you know, obviously you've got in the corner Chris Sanagar, you've got Tony Borg, and they're trying to get him to fight, and especially Sanagar, he kept shouting, step it up, from the corner. And for whatever reason, Joshua John, he was standing right in front of Brad Strand, and just like, wasting so much energy, just moving laterally. You know, there's no punch coming, but just using up all this energy, moving left to right, and his guard going up, and he's bobbing on the spot. And I'm just thinking, throw a punch, man. Throw a punch. You're in range. Like, this guy is in front of you with a low guard. What are you doing? He used up so much energy doing all that stuff. And whenever he got hit with a good shot, he reacted quite bad, like he'd fling his head back, so it looked like it landed even more than it did, kind of thing. It's quite a bad habit. You know, he's just mistiming, kind of, you know, pulling his head back out of the way of a shot, and it looks bad when you get it as wrong as he did. At times he had a couple moments, but like, it was frustrating because I actually think he's got some skills and the rest of it, but he was just too hesitant, way too patient, and I thought that there was moments he could have capitalised on Brad Strand, but he decided not to for whatever reason. Also on the card, friend of the show, Sam Noakes, he's now 12-0 with 12 KOs. When will the KOs stop? who knows? It was for his WBC International Silver Lightweight title. He got in with Spain's Carlos Perez, who was 19-7 with two draws. He'd only been stopped one time. He's now 19-8 with two draws. He's been stopped, like I say, for the second time in his career. He was down twice in the third, twice in the fourth, and deducted a point for holding in the third. Extremely frustrating style. I don't really know what his game plan was. He just seemed to come in there. He kept ducking really low, like almost touching the floor, and he ended up on the floor a few times, and it wasn't ruled a knockdown. It was just bizarre tactics. I don't know what he was trying to do. You know, there was moments where he was in position to land a shot when he did do a nice little move and he didn't throw the shot. You know, he had pretty decent footwork and stuff like that, but I just couldn't understand it. He seemed like he wanted to do more holding than punching. And yeah, credit to Sam Notes, because that must have been quite frustrating. He was just trying to fight the guy. The guy was just holding on, you know, excessively, like I say, had a point deducted. And yeah, it was good to see the fight, you know, ended as early as it was in the end, because if that would have gone on for a few more rounds, I think I would have tore my hair out. And in the main event as well, Gavin Gwynn, now 17-2 with a draw, he was able to win because his opponent, the 42-0 with one draw, undefeated Italian Emiliano Marsili, retired on his stool at the end of round 8. Didn't come out for round nine. He was ahead on the scorecard, though, at the time of the stoppage, Emiliano Marsili. The reason he didn't come out is because he injured his right shoulder. It was hard to know exactly what had actually happened because I was kind of behind his corner, so I didn't see what had gone on when they stopped it. I thought, whoa, what's going on? Someone called me and said, basically, that's just what happened. So they were watching at home, they saw on the TV, and then I was able to tell people kind of ringside what had happened. You know, I'm kind of gutted for the Italian, to be honest with you. I mean, we knew that he came over here years ago, beat Derry Matthews, and then disappeared to Italy and kind of just fought all over Italy beating low-level guys, and then comes back here at 47 years of age, by the way, and looked unbelievable. He was a fantastic mover. I was wondering if he was going to slow down. His footwork was brilliant. Honestly, he's obviously a special fighter, man. I mean, I couldn't believe that he kept up the movement the entire time. Great jab. You know, he hurt Gwynn several times in the fight as well. You know, when he'd hear the 10-second clapper go at the end of a round, he'd quickly, you know, start the combinations and stuff. The guy, you know, he was full of experience, and it's a shame that he hasn't done more in his career. You know, this was his 44th fight, and you know, I think he could have beaten a few good fighters a few years ago, but he still seemed to have enough to beat Gavin Gwynn if he didn't injure his shoulder, which is just bizarre. I mean, it was for the vacant EBU European lightweight title. Gwynn now has that, but part of you feels like the Italian was kind of robbed, really. Not from poor officiating, which is a bit refreshing, but just by the fact that he was ahead, I think, on two of the scorecards. And, you know, it seemed like he would have won the fight. But yeah, Gwynn, he made Gwynn look absolutely dreadful. And they're talking about Gwynn with the likes of Sam Noakes. They're talking about Mark Chamberlain. You know, Gwynn doesn't look like he's on the level of a Sam Noakes at all. Like, honestly, it was bad. Sean Noakes, the brother of Sam, I noticed was sat ringside for Gavin Gwynn's fight. So he was watching that with interest on his brother's behalf. I don't think Sam actually saw the fight, but I was thinking, what on earth are they thinking? Like, this will be easy work. So yeah, I'm gutted for Marsili because he boxed out of his skin. And it's just bizarre. Obviously, so much talent, yet he's left it to 47 years of age to kind of be in another meaningful fight. It just makes no sense at all. But it's a good card all in all. Moving now to the Red Owl Boxing Arena in Houston, Texas, USA. This one was on DAZN, I believe. Over here, the prospect Giovanni Marquez moved to 8-0, a unanimous decision over 6 rounds against Joshua Rivera, now 8-4, and Daniel Bailey with a win. I've heard some people say it was a little bit controversial, but I haven't seen the fight. He's now 12-1. He was able to beat, by majority decision over 6 rounds, friend of the show Malik Warren, who's now 7-1. Moving now to Canada here. Over here, Ryan Rizicki moved to 20-1. He's still got all those KOs, 19 KOs from his 20 wins, and he got in there with, he's always in, I guess, can't miss fights or can't blink fights, Olan Rawaju Duradola. He's now 43-10, and Duradola was stopped in the very first round there. Again, I said, you can put your house on it, this fight's never going the distance, and yeah, it didn't go the distance. One round it took for Rizicki to get Duradola out of there. Duradola needs to hang up the gloves. It's getting dangerous now. He's been stopped 8 times of his 10 losses. Moving now to Germany. This one went on at the Ludwigsburg MHP Arena in Baden-Württemberg. Over here, the rematch between Felix Sturm and Sukru Ulte. Felix Sturm with the win this time. He was much better in the rematch here, which is quite surprising. It was up at light heavyweight. A 9th round TKO for Felix Sturm, now 44-6 with 3 draws. Sukru Ulte now 15-4. I'd never heard of Ulte before the first fight with Sturm, but a lot of people thought he beat Sturm in the first fight and got robbed. And obviously, Sturm's gone away. I guess took him a bit more seriously. Come back and did what a true champion would do in a rematch. Moving now to the Winter Gardens in Blackpool, Lancashire, United Kingdom. Over here, Bradley Ray, friend of the show, with a win. Now 16-1. A KO for him in round 2 against Adam Sislak, who's now 6-13 with a draw. Good win there for Bradley Ray. Moving now to the SSE Arena in Belfast, Northern Ireland, United Kingdom. Over here, few fights to mention. We saw Sean McComb move to 18-1, a unanimous decision over 10 rounds against Sam Maxwell, who's now 17-3. Maxwell down 3 times, once in the 3rd, once in the 5th, and once in the 9th. I don't actually think he was hurt, really, in any of those knockdowns. I think some of them were kind of flash knockdowns, if you like. Yeah, I mean, again, I was saying it's going to be interesting because Sammy Maxwell's been banged out in 2 of his 2 losses prior to this, and Sean McComb isn't a guy who's going to stand there and bang. He's very much a back foot fighter, sometimes quite frustrating to actually watch him. But credit to him, you know, it was a good performance. The way he beat Maxwell in the end was quite impressive. I don't think you can take that away from the guy. I mean, the scorecards in the end, like 100-87 twice and 99-88. So very, very wide, completely dominated Maxwell. But then again, it seems like Maxwell doesn't have much left now. I don't want to see him continue, really, if he's not going to be able to, you know, to beat people like Sean McComb. I mean, he was a good amateur, but it seems like he's left his best days in the amateurs. Moving now to this one, up the card once again. This one was over 10 rounds at super welterweight. We saw Kiva Nagyarko move to 14-0, a split decision over 10 rounds to Troy Williamson, friend of the show, now 20-2 with a draw. Yeah, gutted for Troy Williamson, really gutted. I think he got clipped with a shot in the first round as well, which was a bit mad. And for me, it seemed like he was rocked, you know. He kind of got caught in between throwing. I thought Agyarko started the fight really well. There was a few close rounds in there, and there were some rounds where I think Troy stole it and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, Agyarko for me was the clear winner. I don't even think it should have been a split decision. I thought he won quite clearly. Just a bit more fluid than Troy Williamson. I think Agyarko's footwork was really good. His jab was really good. You know, Troy Williamson landed some good jabs as well, but Agyarko looked the full package in there, you know, and Williamson was just in a few areas a little bit behind him, if you like. So yeah, quite impressed with Agyarko, because I thought it'd be a lot tougher than that, and I thought Troy Williamson potentially could have slightly upset the odds. He was a slight underdog, but yeah, credit to Agyarko, man. He really performed very well there, and I'm excited to see him again. Spoke to Troy Williamson after the fight. Yeah, you know, I don't think he's too pleased, really, but you know, good guy, Troy. All the best to him. Also on the card as well, we saw Lewis Crocker move to 18-0, a unanimous decision over 10 rounds against Tyrone McKenna, who's now 23-4 with a draw. I always thought the fight would go like that. Lewis Crocker did, though, start to try to bang McKenna. very early on with big shots. Like in the first round and second round, he was loading up almost with every single shot. I think he was thinking he could perhaps try and stop McKenna, but McKenna is tough if nothing else and managed to last the 10 rounds, but he took a real pasting in there and it was quite one-sided. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, McKenna has decided to retire from boxing after that. Could be wrong, but if that is right, then all the best to him. And then, yeah, the main event, Michael Conlon now 18-3. He was upset. He was TKO'd by the, I think it was 6-1 underdog, Jordan Gill, who's now 28-2 with a draw. I did bet on this fight. I did bet on Jordan Gill at 6-1. I think I might have got him at 5-1. But yeah, Conlon down once in the second round. And to be honest with you, I mean, there was a couple times where he sort of, he had a few moments around about round four, round five. In the middle part of the fight, he seemed like he kind of was back to it a little bit, and I was wondering, is Jordan Gill slowing down? You know, is his gas tank sort of emptying a little bit from the fast start he had? But every time Jordan Gill would hit Michael Conlon with, you know, with a decent shot, you could see on the face of Conlon he was really feeling it. So yeah, Jordan Gill, he seemed to be extremely heavy-handed out of nowhere, but I think it was more Conlon, you know, that punch resistance just not being there. Massive credit to Jordan Gill, though. I mean, I cannot say it enough. I didn't know about the things he'd been going through outside the ring. It was quite, you know, it's quite sad hearing his post-fight interview when he was talking about his wife leaving him. He's talking about he tried to kill himself, talking about, you know, drinking a whole bottle of vodka just a few months before the fight. If I knew all of that, I wouldn't have bet on the guy. But no, in all seriousness, credit to him. You know, massive upset. He's reignited his career now. And yeah, he was coming off a terrible performance just over a year ago to Kiko Martinez. Both guys were coming off knockout defeats, let's be honest. Again, I wasn't so sure that the main event was going to be a great fight, but it was better than I expected, and I'm happy, really happy for Jordan Gill. As for Michael Conlon, I still think he's very much better suited to the amateurs. I've never really been a massive believer in him. I've always seen lots and lots of flaws since he's turned over, and it's, you know, it's not that surprising. I've bet against Conlon before. I bet against him when he fought Lee Wood. I bet against him when he fought Luis Alberto Lopez. I bet against him here against Jordan Gill, who, like I say, was a 5 or 6-1 underdog. I've just not been a big believer in Conlon, and I seem to have got it quite right about him. But all the best to him in whatever he decides to do moving forward, though I think he should be quite careful and take his time before he makes a solid decision. Moving now, though, to the final card to mention. It went down at the Toyota Center in Houston, Texas, USA. It was live on DAZN. Couple fights to mention on the undercard. Floyd Schofield with a TKO in the very first round against Ricardo Torres, who's now 17-8 with 3 draws. Torres, usually a tough guy, but got banged out in the first round. He was down 4 times. Shane Mosley Jr. as well with a good win. He's now 21-4. His dad was there in attendance. He beat Joshua Conley. Conley decided to retire on his stall at the end of round 6. Didn't come out for round 7. Conley now 17-6 with a draw. Yeah, like I say, always great to see Shane Mosley. I think he's improving and improving every time he fights. You know, he started the fight quite well. I think Conley had a couple of moments, but nothing, you know, that worrying for Mosley. Yeah, good performance from him again. I think sometimes he doesn't need to take some of the shots he takes, but you know, he's been improving. He's been a work in progress. He's been kind of learning on the job, I think. Don't know if you saw any of that, Eddie, but I will come to you for the main event. Ryan Garcia now 24-1. He did get the KO in the end against Oscar Jurado, or Jurado, depends who's pronouncing it. Jurado or Jurado now 26-2 with a draw. You know, interesting style from both guys. Ryan Garcia seeming to turn a lot, you know, making his frame smaller, but kind of putting himself in harm's way a little bit for that big left hook that Jurado kept throwing. You know, there was mean intentions in every single punch that Jurado threw. Sometimes I think he was hitting Garcia on the back of the head, just simply from the way Garcia was standing at times. It wasn't working well. It was some kind of cheap shoulder roll impression. But Garcia, when he did let his hands go, looked explosive as he always does. Big power, big speed, very exciting. I think he's got a bright future still. I still get very excited to see him fight. But he was in with this guy. I didn't know much about the guy, but the guy had a seriously good chin. You could see the power in his shots. They were heavy shots. I'd like to see Gerardo again. But like I say, when he got caught with that shot, I think it was an uppercut that put him down. He got back up at about 9 3/4 and the referee waved it off. I don't think he wanted any more. So a good finish to what was quite an exciting and thrilling contest, actually. And yeah, there were moments where Garcia definitely put himself in harm's way when I don't think he needed to. I think he was standing in the pocket a little bit too much at times when he didn't need to be, and was giving Gerardo a chance when he was standing like that. It was kind of odd to see. I don't know what you thought of it, Eddie. I don't know if you saw the main event or the chief support with Shane Mosley, but tell me if you did see anything.
Yeah, I saw the Ryan Garcia. I saw it, I think, mid rounds on, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I'm trying to remember exactly. I know what's crazy is that I bet that Ryan Garcia was stopping from round 7 to 9. Got a stoppage in 8, which is great for me there. But, it was actually pretty exciting. The kid was really tough. Gerardo, he was really, really, really tough. He was, and he wasn't coming to lay down. He was coming to lay Ryan Garcia down. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, he came up short. But I think a lot of what Ryan Garcia was doing, I thought, was good. It was just the imitation of the shoulder roll was a little bit off, and he was trying to turn his – he was, like, actually turning his back, and it kind of made me just – it's like, how long did he really work on this? And this is when people say, like, you'll see certain guys do things who are special fighters, like Floyd Mayweather, for example, and they'll be able to do it, and then you'll see guys try to copycat it or try to do it, try to, you know, implement it into their game, and it's just not really for them. I seen it with Joe Smith Jr. before, trying to do the same thing, trying to add the shoulder roll to his game, and that's not really his game, just to box anyway. But, you know, things like that happen, and these guys try it. I think it was just a crazy time to try it in a championship fight or a championship level fight, where you're trying to come back and look good and impressive. And I think he did, though, however, look pretty good offensively. Like you said, I think he landed some nice explosive shots, good speed, just really talented kid. But the problem is he's just, you know, trying these little things, these little certain like little things that you see other guys do and thinking it is going to work for you. It's a little crazy for me. Like and honestly, in my career, I tried different things. Like I would try, like even for the fight with Tomas, I tried using the shoulder roll, Philly shell, whatever you want to call it, technique. And that was something that we really worked on. Something I've done. I've always used elements of it in my game, but it wasn't like I was just literally strictly sticking to that. And this is why when I'm watching Garcia and different guys who try to adopt it and try to bring it into their game and literally strictly use that when there's times they need to get that left hand up, it's just really is dangerous. There's a couple of shots he got hit with, which this guy, and the kid's a good puncher, could have got him out of there, could have upset him. You know what I'm saying? So you don't want to do something like that, put yourself in a situation just because you want to try something because you just think you're that much better. Sometimes it's better to stick to your guns. And if it's not working, go back to what you're comfortable with until you can actually make it a real viable part of your game and not something that you're just doing because, you know what I'm saying? But all in all, I thought the performance was good. I'm happy he got the stoppage at the time he did because that helped me. But, you know, all in all, there's some improvements that need to be made. Obviously, nothing's, you know, he didn't look perfect. But, you know, he still had the talent, the explosiveness, the good, you know, some of the footwork, some of the things I saw, even some of the defensive tactics were pretty decent. But, you know, just I'm not saying get away from the shoulder roll thing completely, but he needs to work on it a lot more and really make it something that he can use and it can be beneficial to his career as he goes forward.
Well, there we go. That was Eddie's take. That, though, brings the review part to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the new WBA Super Featherweight Champion of the world. It is, of course, Mr. Lamont Roach Jr. Lamont, welcome to the show, my man.
Hey, man. Thank you for having me, man. It's an honor.
Hey, it's an honor. The honor's mine. So, first question, Lamont. Has it sunk in yet? World champion?
It has, but it hasn't. World champion, man. It's definitely not getting old. It's definitely not getting old. I love hearing it. And when I think about it, it's just amazing.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I remember you first stepping foot on the world scene back in 2019 against the then WBO world champion, Jamel Herring. Going from my memory, and I haven't seen the fight since I was watching it live at the time, but if my memory serves me right, you had him hurt in the 11th round.
Yes, I did. Hurt very bad.
That was it. And then the round came at a good time for him. Obviously, Lamont, you lost that fight then. Do you think that opportunity back then just came around too quickly for you? What was the reason?
I think it just wasn't my time. That's like, to keep it short. You know, if I would have won, of course, you know, definitely, you know, we'd take it. But maybe it just wasn't my time. I think there's definitely things I could have done to, you know, better further my chances to win. Maybe if I would have started earlier, I would have hurt him earlier, and maybe we could have, you know what I'm saying, stopped him or warmed down, given that he was the older fighter and things like that.
And since that loss, obviously you bounce back with 4 wins. Then this opportunity arises to fight Hector Luis Garcia. It was 4 years to the month since that Herring fight. You were the underdog. You upset the odds. Talk me through the fight, my man.
Yeah, I definitely was the underdog, and I get it. He's the champ. You know, sports betting is a little, you know what I'm saying? It is. They see me lose on, you know what I'm saying, when I was on the world stage, they see me lose to Jamel. Jamel was a southpaw. Hector's a southpaw. So I guess they factored in those things, you know, to make me the underdog. But, that underdog mentality gave me the upper hand, but I never once thought that Hector was a better fighter than me or could do anything in the ring better than me. And maybe, I don't know if he underestimated me or if he felt the power early in the fight, but going into that fight, man, I had full confidence, as I always do, but I definitely went in there with the mindset of taking it to him and taking the fight, because to me, he just wasn't as good as me skillfully, and he definitely doesn't have as much will as me.
And describe the feeling, if you can, of finally becoming a world champion. I know that you haven't necessarily had it easy, especially after the Herring fight. You know, you kind of disappeared. You weren't super-duper active. You weren't necessarily fighting on the top of bills. So, yeah, just tell me about that moment, finally hearing and the new.
Man, finally hearing and the new was it just meant so much to me. I was overflowed with emotions. Like, every single emotion was running through my body, man. I was so happy. It was so joyful hearing that. Because I worked my way up the first time to a title shot, to number one contender. And you know, with that setback, I did the same exact thing. Worked my way up. Whether it was behind the scenes, you know, COVID had hit after that fight as well, so it slowed things down. But I stayed steady and kept my nose down and kept grinding. I just embraced every single bit of all the hard work I put in.
And I thought you boxed very well. I thought your jab was brilliant. I thought you outboxed Garcia. And at times of exchanges, you came off best most of the time. However, there was still some controversy. You won by split decision. That was a bit surprising. And of course, you dropped Garcia in the final round. And then, unbelievably, that knockdown won you the fight, according to the scorecards at the end. What was your reaction to finding that out, that you needed that knockdown?
It was, like you said, very surprising. I didn't think that the fight was that close. I can't wait to watch it again. To watch it, because I haven't seen it yet. They haven't showed it on Showtime or anything like that, so I haven't seen the fight. But I definitely, in the ring, I definitely didn't think it was that close. And you know what? My dad was actually preaching to me in the corner that you do not know how these judges are scoring. You are the B-side. That's their fighter. He's the champ. So make sure you take it to him every single round.
Yeah, and that advice was golden because, like I say, I feel like the judges were giving Garcia rounds just because he was walking forward. That's what we see a lot of judges, unfortunately, do. But yeah, the knockdown itself has also caused some debate. Some people felt that the punch was actually to the back of Garcia's head and therefore shouldn't have been ruled a knockdown. What's your view on that?
Well, if you look, I know people don't have the time to go look at it in slow motion or whatever, but I hit him on the side of his head. So there's angles where you see the tip of my glove hitting like the back of his head, but you got to think he threw a jab and at the same time I threw a lead left hook and his jab is on my left hook side. So as he stepped in, I hit him as he was jabbing. So it was kind of a weird angle. And the punch was definitely not intentionally to the back of the head. But I hit him on the side of his head, like on top of his ear, kind of. And it just, flowed back to the back of his head because of the way he was leaning in. So that's how that happened. And he was hurt. You can see it. Like he wasn't trying to disagree with the referee and say, hey, that wasn't a knockdown or anything. It was a good shot, and the good shot put him down due to him, coming in with a jab, and I was timing it.
Yeah, and like I say, to be honest, I don't feel like you needed to knock him down to win the fight. It just so happened that the judges had it like that. Two guys who we've had on the podcast in the last few weeks had come on and hoped you'd win your fight. Jermell Herrin being one of those, he wanted you to win. Obviously, he would love to have the rematch. Albert Bell as well wanted you to win. He hoped that whoever out of the two of you becomes champion first or give the other guy a shot. But the question is, what do you want to do now? You're the champ. You call the shots.
I want to start off by saying, yeah, I appreciate those guys. Cause if they were in the same situation, I would, I would be for them too. So I appreciate those guys. Those are solid guys. We just happen to fight in the same weight. So, what I'd like to do, I'd like to defend at home, show that I am a household name at home. Just to raise my stock. And, cause I'm a free agent. So I want to give the promoters a reason even more reason because I am the champ, but to show that I can sell as well. Cause at the end of the day, this is a business. So I want that for sole purpose. And then after that home title defense, I want to unify for sure. So either it doesn't matter which champion wants to unify, I want to unify and make the big fights and give the fans the best fights possible.
And they say the hardest part of winning a world title is keeping hold of it. I'm sure your lifelong dream was to win one. What's the next goal? How easy or difficult will it be to continue with the same level of hunger going forward, Lamont?
Oh, man. See, that's the thing. That's the thing I think Hector Garcia got caught up with is being champ and his hunger died, especially after he fought Javante for all that money. You know what I'm saying? He probably got comfortable. He probably overlooked me and probably didn't train as hard. So, whatever the case may be, I know that won't ever happen to me. My hunger will never die because I always want to be the best. I'm so competitive. And I want to show that I'm the best at 130. And I think my goal is to be a unified. My next goal is to be a unified world champ. Definitely. My next goal is to be a unified world champ. And then my next goal after that is to be a two division world champ.
I think that's some fantastic goals that you're setting yourself there. There's an old saying in boxing, Lamont, and it's, 20 fights to learn and 20 fights to earn. And I think now it's time for you to start earning. I think you've done the learning part. Yeah, you're the first person that I've interviewed this December. Every year we have a rule on the podcast. Everyone I interview in the month of December, I have to ask what's on their Christmas wish list. In a realistic world, what do you want 2024 to bring your boxing career? And I'm happy that I'm asking this question to you because I think it's a very fitting question.
Yeah, a realistic Christmas wish list. The number one is, like you said, to earn. this is a life-changing moment for me, man. And you know, like I said, it's a business, and the pay is going to definitely be different. I want to set myself up, you know, for financial stability. As I've been doing, but you know what I'm saying, it's life changing now. So I have a son, and I just want him to enjoy the fruits of my labor as well.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing, my friend. That really is lovely. So it's about making some money next year, being able to set yourself up. You haven't really named anyone sort of by name that you want to fight that's on your hit list. Is there any names at all? I know you said...
Oh, I can clear that up for you right now. Okay. I want to fight Foster. I want to fight Navarrete, or I want to fight Cordina.
Okay, that's
and one of those in 2024. One of them in 2024.
Absolutely.
Either or. It doesn't matter. No specific order, but one of them in 2024 for sure.
And there's no actual beef with any of those three, though?
Yeah, no, I don't know them, man. They don't know. I know Shock, he's cool. I know Shocky Foster, he's cool. He congratulated me on the win. And I've known him since the amateurs. I've been boxing, and he's been boxing in the amateurs. We've been seeing each other across multiple tournaments and stuff like that. So, you know, he was always a pretty good fighter.
Okay, man, that's cool. And my last real question for you, Lamont, and I've purposely not given you any notice. I wanted to kind of put you on the spot a little bit. Favorite UK fighter? I like to ask this to everyone that we speak to from overseas. It can be of all time. You can give me a guy that retired 10 years ago if you want. But who springs to mind?
Prince Nassim, number one. He's one of my favorite fighters.
That is the most popular answer. Almost everyone says that.
Yeah. But he's one of my favorite fighters, period. If you ever go see an interview and they ask me who are like my top five favorite boxers, he's definitely in my top five every single time.
What did you like most about the Prince, Lamont?
He mastered his awkward style and used his punching power to his advantage. Because he knocked a lot of guys out with that silly, you know, herky-jerky move and all that. He was so dominant at that one weight class, and, you know, he was a beast.
Yeah, he absolutely was. And like I say, a lot of people say that. It's a really popular answer. But listen, Lamont, I just want to say it's been a real pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for your time. Congrats again on that brilliant win, and we'll speak again in the future for sure. You take care.
Thank you, man. I appreciate the love. Thanks for having me.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. Just one piece to bring you, and it's that Adam Azim will be defending his European title against Enoch Paulsen. That's going to be on Saturday, February the 3rd at the OVO Arena in Wembley. It's going to be live on Sky Sports, but on the undercard of Bouatsi Aziz. That's the one piece of news. Moving now to the preview part. We're going to start here tomorrow at the Fuse in Partington, Manchester. It's not a place I think I've spoke about before, but anyway, friend of the show, former world champion Paul Butler, 35-3. It's a six rounder for him at bantamweight against Nabil Ahmed, who is 2-25. With two draws, there's been a lot of outrage, to be totally honest with you, that Paul Butler is actually fighting a guy that has this record, you know, 2-25 with two draws. A lot of people saying it shouldn't even be sanctioned. He's a former world champion. Just two fights ago, he was a world champion. You know, got in there with Inoue, went 11 rounds with Inoue. Here he is in a six rounder against a guy who's 2-25 with two draws. Also on this card, it should be mentioned that it's the return to the ring for Callum Johnson, friend of the show, his record is 20-1. He hasn't boxed since 2021 in October, so it's been just over 2 years. And like I say, I believe he's going to be coming back at cruiserweight. I don't think there's an opponent just yet for him, but it's going to be good to see him back because, I don't think he was having the best of times, you know, in and outside of the ring a couple years ago, but he seems to be in a better place now, and he's moved up a weight. He says he's much fitter and stronger there. We'll have to wait and see. What else do we have? Moving now to York Hall. Again, this one is tomorrow. It goes down in Bethnal Green. No TV for this, but we will see a couple of decent fights here. We're going to see Archie Sharp, 23-0, in what is pretty much just a tick-over fight. It's an 8-rounder. I think he's got to have this one fight here before he gets in with Albert Bell, if I'm not mistaken, for some time in the early part of next year. And obviously, Archie Sharp's trying to go for the WBO Super Featherweight World title. He gets in here, though, with Victor Julio, who's 16-9. Interestingly, he put together 16 wins in a row. He was 16-0, and then he put together 9 losses in a row. So he's coming off 9 losses, and he gets in with Archie Sharp, who I think will be looking to try and stop him, if I'm going to be completely honest. Also on the card as well, Elliot Wow, who's 7-0. He gets in with Darren Tetley, who's 22-5. It's over 8 rounds there at welterweight. It's a good fight, that. I like Elliot Wow. Nice guy. Met him once or twice. And it's a good fight. I don't think you can ask much more for a guy that's just 7-0. So all the best to him in that fight there. Should be a good one. What else do we have? Moving now to the Wind Creek Event Center in Pennsylvania, USA. Over here, a couple fights to mention. There's a few guys on this card here. We're going to see Jesse Hart, 29-3. I always said it. I mean, he's a friend of the show, but I always said it. If he doesn't become a world champion, then what a shame. And I'm going to say, I don't think it's going to happen now for whatever reason. He's been very, very inactive. What's he had? He was in the ring 4 months ago, actually, but he hadn't boxed for almost 2 years prior to that. So one fight in the last 2 years. He's back in action here, though. He gets in with a guy who's 14-7. The guy's name's Jason Minder. Jason Minder, by the way, has lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in a row, 4 by TKO. So I'm not expecting too much from him. Should be a nice easy win there for Jesse Hart. Also on the card as well, return to the ring for former world champion Jarrett Hurd, who's currently 24-3. He's coming off 2 back-to-back losses. I mean, I remember his loss, I think, what was it, earlier this year? Jose Resendez in one of the biggest upsets you're going to see all year. And, yeah, the loss before that to Luis Arias. So he's back. He hasn't actually beaten anyone since the last win he had was back in January 2020, so pre-COVID. He gets in with a guy called Ty Edmonds, who's 14-5. Ty Edmonds as well is coming off 2 back-to-back defeats, and his last win was in April of 2021. So, yeah, it's just crazy here. Moving now to Australia, over here at the Pullman Hotel in Albert Park, Victoria. Over here, friend of the show, former world champion Andrew Maloney, 25-3. Gets in with Judy Flores, who's 13-1. It's over 10 rounds there at Super Flyweight. All the best to Andrew Maloney. He's going to be getting back in the ring here for the first time after being brutally knocked out by Junto Nakatani. I'm hoping it didn't take too much out of him, that fight there. He obviously got battered in that fight and then stopped in the last round. Hope he's okay. Hope he's back to full fitness and the rest of it. And they're expecting him to stop Judy Flores. Judy Flores is a bit tough and stuff, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. Should be relatively straightforward, though, for Andrew Maloney. Moving now to the Stade Roland Garros in Pavie, also known as Paris, in France. Over here, the Olympic gold medalist Tony Yoka returns to the ring, and the odds are very, very, very tight on this one. They really are, which is kind of crazy. He's 11-2. He's coming off that loss last time out, the shock loss to Carlos Takam. I don't remember if I said it on the podcast or not, but Carlos Takam was 18-1 to win on points, and of course he did win on points. Tony Yoka as well, we should mention, is not in the best of form. The fight before that, he lost to Martin Bacoli, so he's coming off two back-to-back defeats, though they were split decisions and majority decisions. He gets in, though, in a 10-rounder here with Riyad Mehri, who is 31-2 from Belgium, 31 years of age. If I'm not mistaken, I think this guy used to box at cruiserweight. If I'm not mistaken, could be wrong. Just having a little look. Yeah, he did. He used to box at cruiserweight. Took a loss to Arsene Gulamirian back in 2018 for the WBA interim cruiserweight title. And at that point, he weighed 197.5 pounds. He did actually end up winning the WBA cruiserweight world title. Okay, that was back in 2021. Since then, he's made a move up to heavyweight. He's had two fights at the weight, one against a guy who was 8-12 and one against Kevin Lorena, in which he lost almost every round on one card. But he lost unanimously over 12 rounds. But that one did go down in South Africa. You have to wonder if maybe it was a bit closer than the scorecards had it. But anyway, gets in with Tony Yoka. Tony, I don't know the height of Mary's height doesn't seem to be listed, but Tony Yoka's a big, strong heavyweight, even if he is limited, like I say. It's a must-win fight for Tony Yoka. I think that goes without saying, like, he has to win this. But he's a big 6'7" heavyweight. They're both the same age, 31. And also, on the undercard, we're going to see Victor Yoka and Axel Yoka. So I'm going to assume that both guys are related to Tony Yoka. So this is a bit of a family party here. All the best to Tony Yoka. And just to quickly clarify, I did mention the odds being quite close. Tony Yoka is 1-2 to win this fight here. So all the best to him. Moving now to the Agenda Arena in Dubai. Over here, we're going to see Mark Petrovsky, who's 6-0. This is an 8-rounder at heavyweight. He gets in with Lucas Big Daddy Brown, friend of the show, former WBA heavyweight world champion, coming off the loss to Jarrell Big Baby Miller back in March of this year. Hasn't boxed since then. That one was in Dubai, so he's back in Dubai. And this guy that he gets in with, 6-0 with 4 KOs, he's a 6'1" southpaw. So, that's interesting. Big Daddy would be the much taller guy. I hope he can do it, to be honest with you. I will mention as well that this guy, Petrovsky, in his last fight, he boxed the kingpin, Kevin Johnson, and he won by majority decision over 6 rounds. But what is interesting is two judges gave him every round out of 6, and the other judge gave it 3-3 over 6 rounds. So that might tell a bit of a story there. That was only 4 months ago. All the best to Big Daddy Brown, man. Moving now to the Thunder Studios in Long Beach, California, USA. Over here, we're going to see friend of the show, former world champion Mark Magseo. He's 24-2. He gets in with Isaac Avalar, who's 17-6. That's over 10 rounds there at super featherweight. That is a bit high for Mark Magseo. I mean, what was his last fight? I think, his last fight was against Brandon Figueroa. Again, he's coming off two back-to-back defeats. But that fight with Brandon Figueroa was at, God almighty, was it featherweight? So he's moved up here to super feather. Okay, interesting. That's over 10, no, it was listed as 10 rounds, but it's now been changed to 8 rounds, that one there for Mark Magseo. So I'm going to assume it's 8. Moving now to the big one of the weekend, I think it's fair to say, at the Chase Center in San Francisco, California, USA. It's DAZN pay-per-view in the States, but it's regular DAZN here in the UK. Let's just go straight to the main event. Eddie Regis Prograis, friend of the show, 29-1, defending his WBC World Super Lightweight title over 12 rounds against friend of the show, former lightweight world champion Devin Haney, 30-0. How do you see it going down?
Man, that's the very, very underrated fight, I think this is. Very interesting contrast in styles. Regis Prograis is not the most common style you will ever see. I mean, he's aggressive, has some boxing ability, but just a little raw in some areas. and rigid, but at the same time, there is a polished pace to him. Like, he's not overdoing it. You know, he's a pro. You can really see he's a pro. He's a good puncher, tough, good chin. You know what I mean? He's not an easy guy to beat. Not at all. You know, I seen him fight for, I seen him fight out. I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy was a really tough guy, good, really good fighter, gave everybody trouble, but Prograde did a pretty good job neutralizing him. But it was a good fight. He's the kind of guy that can spoil it because he can punch. He can punch, and it's not going to be an easy fight for Devin Haney. You know what I mean? I expect Haney to be able to go in and maybe win a decision, but I don't think he's going to be able to really hurt him. And nor do I think he's really going to be able to deter too much of what his offense is going to be. I think it's going to have to be with Haney's going to have to be on his A game. He's going to have to be sharp, and he's going to have to be to the point, land his shots, not take any unnecessary chances, and get out. And he's a southpaw, if I'm not mistaken. Prograde. So yeah, it's another thing. So shots are going to be coming from odd angles. Don't get me wrong; they're professional guys. They should be able to handle it. They've had camps. They've been prepared. You know, I even saw the face-off between them two. A couple of funny moments in that face-off, but it's an exciting fight. I think because what I do like about Devin Haney is Devin Haney's not backing down. He's going to try. You know, even if he's in a situation where it looks like he's getting the shit end of it, he's gonna fight you. But I also think that could be to his detriment. And I think that's why. You know, I look at Shakur as being, you know, above him, and because he just understands so much of what he needs to do in situations a little better than Devin does. He responds a little better defensively than Devin does. But, you know, that vulnerability makes the fight even more interesting. But I just think he's going to have to be very, very careful with Prograde, because Prograde is the kind of guy that could spoil the whole situation. His whole party, his coming out party at 140 can be spoiled right on the first fight. And this is just the guy to do it, because he has that kind of, you know, ability, that kind of, you know, punching power. It's just, and his style's not common. Like I said, it's a little bit of awkwardness to it. So it's going to be some learning. He's going to have to do early in the fight. He's going to have to stay behind the jab, be a little careful, not take any chances early. And then maybe you'll be able to get that decision, but it ain't going to be easy.
Yeah, such an interesting fight this. I've really thought long and hard about it, and there's so many factors. I think the biggest thing is just to see how Devin looks at 140. Obviously, he's always looked massive for lightweight. He seemed like at times he was, you know, draining himself to make the weight and stuff. He looks, you know, he looks good up at 140. He looks massive for 140 again. I give him a lot of credit. I mean, I give both guys credit for taking this fight, but I give most of the credit to Haney, because he's, you know, he's jumping straight in with a solid fighter at 140, arguably the best fighter in the world at 140 right now. You look at both guys' recent form. I mean, Devin Haney last time out boxed, obviously, Lomachenko, a southpaw, and most people, including myself, thought that Haney lost that fight. Regis Prograde, a lot of people felt he lost his last fight to Danielito Zorrilla, a guy that we didn't really know much about. Zorrilla dropped Prograde. It wasn't actually ruled a knockdown, but Prograde admitted it should have been. And obviously won by split decision as well. So I don't know what to make of it. I mean, I was alarmed at how bad Prograde was in his last fight at cutting the ring off. And just knowing the style of Haney, I don't see him standing in the middle of the ring trading shots with Prograde. He's very safety first. He's going to be trying to jab and move and use that ring. And if Prograde can't cut off the ring like he seemed like he completely couldn't do it against Zorrilla, then it's going to be a long night for him. He's going to be eating a lot of jabs, and he's going to probably lose every round to Haney. However, Haney can be hit. And Haney, I'm super confident, would have never been hit by anyone who hits as hard as Prograde. So there's so many factors to take in. Another thing that I think a lot of people aren't talking about enough is the fact that I know Pro Grey well. I've spoke to Pro Grey. We had him on just last week. Pro Grey has got the fire in his belly, man. I'm telling you now, he is on it. He is on it. That is not the same attitude that I saw from him when I spoke to him before the Zaria fight. You know, he was way calmer, way more relaxed, very nonchalant, very unlike his usual self. He was fighting a guy that, you know, he expected to easily beat. But you can see he's got the bit between his teeth here. And I think he's seriously, seriously amped up for this fight. He's talked that he's had a super long training camp. He's pretty much done two training camps for this fight. He's super fit. He's just ready to go. And I believe every word of that. I watched the face-off as well. I think Pro Grey was really good in the face-off with some of the things he said. And you can see he's got so much belief in himself. Like, he thinks he's going to knock Haney out. It's just such a good fight, man. Like, again, I can see Pro Grey getting to him. And if he gets to him, he will stop him. But then I can also see Haney boxing a masterclass, using the ring, using the jab, using his superior footwork, and just getting out of danger, you know? I can see that as well. It's such a good fight, man. Honestly, I can persuade myself to go with Haney, and I can persuade myself to go with Pro Grey very easily. If I give this fight too much thought, I'll go one way or the other, then I'll flip-flap back and forth. I almost don't want to think about it too much because it's that much of a pick-em fight. I'm so excited for it. But yeah, just I don't know how it's going to go. It's just such an intriguing fight. Eddie, was you going to add something to that or not before we move on?
You know, it's so crazy that you said that it's such a pick'em fight. It's that I made two bets, and one of them had Pro Grey winning by knockout, and the other one had Wayne Haney winning by decision. So
I think one of them will happen.
Huh?
I think one of them is definitely going to happen.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I doubt it would be the opposite on both ends. I would doubt that. But just say, look, it's boxing. I wouldn't be surprised if the opposite fucking happened on both ends, which means that would mean Pro Grey win by decision and Haney win by knockout. But it's what I put on because I just both of them are entirely possible. And that's the beauty of this fight.
Yeah, brilliant fight. On the undercard, we're going to see Liam Paro. He's 23-0. He's for the WBO Global Super Lightweight title. 23-0 is Paro. However, for me, he's largely untested. In his last fight, I did watch it. He destroyed Brock Jarvis in just a round. That's another Australian guy. But that fight was 14 months ago, and it only went one round. In the fight before that, he won a split decision over 10 rounds. That was back in December of 2021. So the way I'm looking at it is he's actually just done one round in 2 years. He's getting in with Montana Love, who's 18-1 with a draw. We know the one loss come to an Australian, but it was because he was disqualified because he threw him over the damn ropes. That was Steve Spark, and that was also 13 months ago. The interesting price here, I think, is Montana Love to win this one on points. He's not really a big puncher. I think he's going to be quite sensible. I think he's probably had enough time to reflect on what he did wrong in the fight against Steve Spark. And 3-1 for him to win on points. I think that's a massive, massive price, by the way. The only thing about Montana Love, though, is that I think he sometimes, you know, gets hit quite a bit. And I don't think he's got the best of chins, even though, like I say, he's never been stopped or anything like that. What else do we have? What else do we have on the card? Andy Cruz, 1-0. It's for the IBF International Lightweight title. It's a 10-rounder. He gets in with Giovanni Straffon, who is 26-5 with a draw. They're expecting Andy Cruz to stop Straffon. I'm not entirely sure why, because Andy Cruz didn't stop... what's the guy he boxed? He boxed a seriously tough guy in his debut. The guy's gone the distance with everyone. Juan Carlos Burgos, that was the guy's name. Never been stopped, him. So yeah, Andy Cruz, you know, there's no real indication that he's going to be a knockout merchant as a pro. You know, he's a great amateur and the rest of it. He gets in with Giovanni Straffon, who's only been stopped one time in his five losses. He's a tough southpaw Mexican. He can really punch as well. You know, he's got 19 KOs from his 26 wins. I've seen him a few times. But the one time that he lost a fight by stoppage was two fights ago to Zur Abdalaev. He actually retired on his stall at the end of five rounds. I don't know what the story behind that. I don't know if there was an injury or something. I don't know. But that aside, I don't see why people are expecting Cruz to knock him out. It's going to be an interesting one, though, and it's a massive, massive fight for just your second pro fight once again for Andy Cruz. They're wasting no time with the guy. Also on the card, we're going to see Ebony Bridges defending, fighting for the vacant IBF World Bantamweight title. She's 9-1 currently. She gets in with Mayo Yoshida, who's 16-4. We did see Mayo Yoshida fight just 4 weeks ago. She lost unanimously over 10 rounds to Sharetta Metcalf, who I believe was offered the fight again at late notice against Ebony Bridges, but passed it up because she, you know, wasn't in shape to fight. And yeah, Yoshida stepped in. Ebony Bridges is probably quite a shrewd move. It's going to probably be a good name on her record, you know, who hasn't really had a proper training camp for her. So she'll probably win this one. Will she become the first lady to stop her? I'm not entirely sure. But again, I think the price is pretty decent on that. I can't remember what it is though off the top of my head. Yoshida has lost three of her last five fights, by the way. Ebony Bridges. I don't know what happened to her world title. I don't know if she's now moved up in weight or whatever. Yeah, because she defended it last time out against Shannon O'Connell. I remember that. She looked good. She stopped her. That was for the IBF Bantamweight world title. She's now boxing for the same title again, but it says it's vacant. So I don't know what's gone on there. And I can't believe it's been a whole year since the Shannon O'Connell fight. I don't know what's happened there. Seems to be pretty weird. Also on the card, though, we should mention as well the Brazilian Beatriz Ferreira, 3-0, gets in with Destiny Jones, who's 5-1. That's over 8 2-minute rounds there. Moving now to the Charles F. Dodge City Center in Pembroke Pines in Florida, USA. Over here, again, this one's going to be on ESPN. It's a top-ranked show. One of my favourite fighters to watch, Richard Torres Jr., 7-0 with 7 KOs. He gets in with Curtis Harpo, who's 14-10. I did see Curtis Harpo's last fight when he got in with the Italian, Guido Vianello, and he took him 8 rounds. Guido Vianello's quite a big puncher, you know, knocked out most guys, but he was able to take those shots and land some good ones himself, even though he lost almost every round. The fight before that, he also went 8 rounds with another fighter. He got TKO'd in the 8th round, but he went 8 rounds, so he's been pretty durable the last few times. He did get banged out in 4 rounds by Bakadir Jalilov. That was 3 fights ago. I think Richard Torres will be trying to go in there and beat that and try and get him out in under 4 rounds, I would say. But it's an 8 rounder there. All the best to both guys there. Another good fight on the undercard as well. Jahi Tucker, 10-1, gets in with Francisco Daniel Veron, who's 13-0. That's over 8 rounds there at Super Welter. Veron is the slight favourite there, but that's another pick and fight. We're going to see Bruce Carrington, 9-0, getting in there with Jason Sanchez, 16-4. That's over 10 rounds there. We're going to see Rohan Polanco, 10-0, getting in with friend of the show, Keith Hunter, 15-1. That's over 8 rounds there at Super Lightweight. All the best to Keith Hunter there, of course. What else do we have? A guy called Damian Nyber. He's 12-0. He's the guy that stopped Curtis Harper in the 8th and final round 2 fights ago on Harper's record. He's 12-0, Nyber. It's an 8 rounder. He gets in with Michael Polite Coffee, who's 13-4. What a shame. It seems like he's just completely turned into an opponent now. But yeah, he's back. They're expecting him to get stopped. They're quite highly expecting that. I don't know what to expect really there. I mean, Michael Polite Coffee is just a guy that seems to come in massively overweight with very little ambition these days. Also on the card as well, Xander Zayas, 17-0, gets in with Jorge Fortea, who's 24-3 with a draw. Could be interesting. It's been really good watching the career progress of Zayas, still a young guy. been extremely active as well. Seems like he's fighting almost every other week. And yeah, this guy, Jorge Fortea, lost his the last time he lost the fight was to Anthony Fowler back in March of 2021. Since then, he's put together 3 wins in a row, 2 against undefeated fighters, so it could be interesting there. And the main event is Robeci Ramirez defending his WBO world featherweight title. 13-1 Ramirez. He gets in with Rafael Espinoza, who's 21-0 with 18 KOs. The 29-year-old Mexican, 6'1", massive for a featherweight, if that is true. Never seen him fight, never really heard of him. Look for his record and don't really recognize any names. It's either going to be a hidden gem of a fighter who can really fight, or it's going to be a guy that really can't fight at all. I don't think it's going to be any in between. It's either going to be an easy night for Ramirez or an extremely difficult one. I don't know. Eddie, you did unmute during some of that. Did you want to say something, or?
Funny little thing about the guy that's fighting Michael Polaikoffi. Damian Nyaba was the kid that I first sparred with when I was coming back in. They just called me. His people were actually with what's
Adam
my guy's
Kalnacki.
Name? Kalnacki, there you go. And they called me and they said, hey, I don't know what Bashir hit me up to, and he was saying, hey man, you want to go up and spar with this kid? And I'm like, okay. At that point, I hadn't sparred or done anything for like 4 years. And then I remember going up there, and Sean George was the trainer of Big Bang Zhang, and he was up there too sparring. So they were sparring. We were all sparring, and I sparred with this kid, and they were, I didn't know what to expect from myself. And I was really, they were shocked at what I was able to do with the kid. But the kid, he's not bad. He's pretty good, throws punches. You know what I mean? He's really, really big kid, like about a legitimate 6'7", maybe more. Box is okay, but he couldn't hit me for much, but for the most part, I don't think he's had the same kind of issues with Michael Polaikoffi. So it's going to be that part. I just wanted to bring that up because that was a very interesting situation. It's funny that you brought him up when you were talking about the fight. So yeah, I'm kind of now I'm a little bit kind of looking forward to seeing if I can see that. So we'll see.
We'll see. Moving now, though, to the final card to mention. It goes down on Sunday, which is a weird one. Sunday at the Bournemouth International Centre in Bournemouth, Dorset, United Kingdom. It's going to be live on Sky Sports. Let's start with the undercard. We're going to see Lewis Edmondson getting in there with Dimitro Fedas. We're going to see Francesca Hennessy, the daughter of Mick Hennessy. She's 1-0 with 1 KO. She gets in with Lucrecia Arrieta, who's 6-5. Only been stopped one time, from Argentina, known as La Gringa. She's 31 years of age. Also on the card as well, we're going to see Lauren Price, 5-0 in a 8-2-minute rounds against Sylvia Bartot, who's 11-3 with a draw. Lauren Price, I think, will win this one quite comfortably. I like Lauren Price a lot, actually. I think she's got a very bright future, obviously. Olympic gold medalist. She gets in with Bartot, who's Italian, who's only been stopped one time. It was back in April of last year. Since then, she's had 5 fights, 3 wins, but 2 back-to-back defeats, including one just 3 months ago to Michaela Mayer. She lost on points to her. What else do we have on this card? We're going to see the return to the ring for Ben Whittaker, 4-0. It's an 8-rounder here at light heavyweight against Steven Dredhage, who is 11-2 with a draw. I've never heard of this guy. He's been stopped in both of his losses. He's a 6'3" Albanian living in Italy. I just want to see who he's been in with, see if there's any recognizable names, and there isn't. So not expecting too much from him. Good fight on the card for the vacant English super welterweight title between Lee Cutler, 13-1, and Kingsley Egbenike, who is 8-2 with a draw. Also on the card, friend of the show Michael McKinson, 25-1. It's a 10-rounder for him at welterweight against this undefeated fighter from Ghana called Musa Lawson. Never heard of the guy, but he's 11-0 with 9 KOs. Yeah, I don't know what to expect from this guy. Once again, he's either going to be absolutely dreadful or he's going to be a hidden gem of a fighter, a hidden talent that no one's ever heard of, a guy that comes over from Africa that can bang like hell. And we've seen enough of them in boxing before, you know, these surprise packages that come over. But yeah, looking at his record, I mean, God, he's beaten, I think, two or three guys with winning records. And those winning records were 3-1, 3-1, and 13-3. And sorry, 11-5 as well. So he's been banging out most of those guys. A couple of debutants. In his last fight, he boxed a guy who was 0-10. He's boxed a guy who was 0-1, another guy who was 0-1, and another guy who was 0-2. One guy he's actually boxed. He's boxed this one guy called Isaac Tete. He's boxed him twice. He's made him retire on his stall both times. not entirely sure what to expect there, but all the best to Michael McKinson. And yeah, the main event, Chris Billam Smith, 18-1 in his first defense of his WBO World Cruiserweight title. It's obviously over 12 rounds. He gets in with Poland's Matthias Mastanek, whose record these days is 47-5. I'm expecting a really, really tough fight. He's only been stopped once, Mastanek, and you've got to go right the way back to his fight with Grigory Drozd. And that was over 10 years ago now. Since that time, he's had many, many, many fights. Obviously, losing a split to Yuri Kalenga, beating Jean-Marc Mormec back in 2014, losing to Tony Bellew back in 2015, beating Ishmael Salak back in 2017, beating Yuri Kalenga in their rematch, losing on points to Yuniel Dutokos, who's a massive puncher, took his shots and obviously didn't get stopped, and he lost a close fight there. And then since then, he's put together 5 wins in a row, 3 by a KO, including taking 2 guys' O's. So yeah, I think he's not completely done, even though it seems like Mastanek's been around for about 25 years. As for Chris Billam Smith, really happy for him just to have become a world champion, to be honest with you. I mean, I think his fight last time out against Lawrence Okolie was more to do with Lawrence Okolie being that bad rather than Chris Billam Smith being that good. But I won't blame Lawrence Okolie for everything. I do give Chris Billam Smith a bit of credit. I think he boxed to a smart game plan and he listened to pretty much everything that he was being told by Shane McGuigan, who of course knew Lawrence Okolie inside out. But yeah, it's going to be good to see him back out again, Chris Billam Smith. But I really fancy the chances of Mastanek. He's got so much experience. He seems to have found a little bit of an Indian summer in his career. Seems like he's in some good form. And like I say, Chris Billam Smith, I mean, other than that win against Lawrence Okolie, I don't think he's had the most impressive resume. I mean, who's his best win other than Okolie? And I don't want to take that away from him. Of course, you know, he dethroned an undefeated world champion. But again, other than that, his best win is probably Isaac Chamberlain or Tommy McCarthy. I mean, that's such a dramatic step up to Matthias Mastanek's level from there, you know? So I think that there could be an upset here, and I will be putting something small on Matthias Mastanek, but I think it's going to be a great fight, and it's amazing we've got fights once again on Friday, Saturday and Sunday in the month of December. It's absolutely bonkers, but I you know, long may it continue, because boxing every day will be my dream, and hopefully we get there someday. But anyway, that is it though for the preview part of the show. In part one, we did the review part, then we welcomed our special guest, the reigning WBA super featherweight world champion, Mr. Lamont Roach. And in part two, we did the news. We just finished the preview part there. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 425 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the reigning WBA super featherweight world champion, Mr. Lamont Roach Jr. The biggest thanks of all though goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. One piece of news to bring you that we didn't talk about earlier on. It's broke since we've been recording. It's that Amazon Prime have struck a deal with PBC, and they're announcing a new multi-year rights agreement beginning in March 2024. That's when we're going to see the first event. That's when it's supposedly going to be going down, at the first event for March 2024. No other kind of announcements. I think everyone's at the minute just being a little bit tight-lipped about it, but it's an exciting thing, and it's great to see, obviously, PBC back. You know, it looked for a while that they had no broadcast deal. They've now got one, so it's going to be great to see them back on TV. And yeah, there's one other thing I want to mention. If you're not following us on Twitter or whatever, if you haven't seen the tweets, we're now asking you all as listeners to send in your nominations for the end of year Box Hard Podcast Awards. So if you're listening to this and you haven't already submitted yours, it'd be great if you could submit yours. So you can obviously send them to us on Instagram at Box Hard Podcast. Just send us a DM or on Twitter at BoxHard_podcast. So we're looking for your personal favorite female fighter of 2023, prospect of 2023, upset of the year 2023, British fighter of the year 2023, young fighter of the year 2023, that's 25 years of age and under, young fighter of the year, fighter of the year period as well in 2023, knockout of the year 2023, and fight of the year 2023. So that is all. So once again, that's fight of the year, knockout of the year, young fighter, fighter in general, British fighter, upset of the year, prospect of the year, and female fighter of the year. So if you could get those submissions in, that'll be fantastic. Each and every one will be read out on the end of year special podcast. And also pound for pound lists. If you want to submit your top 10 pound for pound lists, then you're more than welcome. Myself and Eddie will go through every single one that's sent in. So again, we did put a couple tweets out. We didn't have that many replies. So if you're listening now, it'd be great if you could send us your lists. You don't have to do them all. You can do whatever category you want. But it'd be great if you could put together 10 people on the pound for pound list. But anyway, that is about everything from myself. Thanks once again for tuning in. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again next week.